Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's get to Greco. John Greco, former Browns lineman, always a good guy. Current Browns analyst, he joins us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. John, how the hell are you?
I'm better now that I heard that rant from Perrysburg. That was amazing.
That's pretty nuts, huh?
That was good. I enjoyed that. I needed that this morning.
I'm looking for bright spots here. I'm going to get to the fan stuff here in a second because you're a former player, obviously. That's part of the reason we bring you on. Could this make the offensive line look better now that, hey, you're going to have Jameis back there, it seems. I don't know what's going to – I mean, Bailey Zappi's a stand-in-the-pocket-and-deliver guy. Dorian, I'm not sure how this is going to work with his finger. We'll find out. But like, if Jameis stands in the pocket, could just knowing where this guy's going to be make it a little bit easier on this offensive line that has been under duress for 3 months?
I don't know, Ken.
Oh,
because
boy.
When we were talking about Deshaun and the events leading up to this moment where we're at now. Every week I'd come on your show and I'd tell you, Deshaun could do some things better, but there's a lot of times where it's not blocked up. And we talked about the team needing a spark, and maybe this is it. Maybe the change will ignite a fire in that room, because I'm still seeing some of the things that are causing them to fall short as a unit. So with Jameis back there, we'll assume that DTR's finger is going to be screwed up and he's going to be sidelined. It's going to be Jameis. The offensive line has to do a lot of little things better. And I feel like a broken record. I've said that. But, I saw it last week. They're doing a five-man protection. The most dangerous four come, and they leave a guy scot-free. They leave a great defensive end scot-free, and he absolutely depletes DTR. Those are things that you work on in the spring. I mean, like in the classroom, it's like, hey, look, five-man protection, take the most dangerous four. And I just don't know if there's a communication issue or what's happening. Because I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, guys don't care. I mean, I don't think that's true. But when you look at the product out there, I'm going to guess that it's just like either the guys aren't prepared, some of the guys aren't prepared, or there's a communication problem, and they're not seeing looks that are showing up on film, and they're not communicating them properly or anticipating them and putting themselves in the best situation. So, Ken, I hope that it looks different. I mean, my God, it has to, or we're going to be signing more guys off teams' practice squads. But Jameis is in there. We'll see what a week of preparation and game plan for him looks like. Like I said, I've been on teams where you're making changes and the offensive line room has got, it kind of looks yourself in the mirror and you're like, we got to be better. I mean, we have to do things better. This is on us. They don't make quarterback changes, because we're playing outstanding. Yes, the quarterback, wasn't playing up to speed, but it starts with us. And that's got to be their mindset, and I think it will. And we'll see what it looks like, on Monday when we break everything down.
All right, John, what I do not understand is how they go from looking like one of the most professional offenses ever those last 5 weeks, whatever, in December last year, And then they come back this year. They can't even line up. It seems like every time they gain anything more than 4 yards, it ends up being illegal procedure. Guys are lined up wrong. We even laughed yesterday about how on Sunday you had an offsides and the fans cheered. And then they said on the offense. How did this happen considering how great it all looked last year?
Anthony, I think it's just attention to detail and lack of focus and communication. I mean, I hate to dumb it down to that, but that's what it is. I mean, I don't see other teams making these elementary mistakes week in and week out. And it's like before the game even begins, you can just chalk up 30 yards of penalties on the offense for pre-snap penalties and alignment issues. There's always going to be holdings. There's always going to be aggressive penalties. And coaches would always say, at least throughout my career, that you know they can live with those aggressive penalties because you're in the heat of the battle. Sometimes things happen. But, I mean, my God, you know, we're down near the goal line. We can't get lined up or you're flinching, jumping off sides. And I just think it's a focus thing. And either they're not – that isn't a point of emphasis at practice or in the building, or it's just been something that's been allowed to – slip throughout the year and it's not getting addressed. Now, I don't know what you do. I don't know what the answer is. It's like, if my kid keeps making the same mistake, I can take away his iPad. I can do this. What do you do for these guys? You know, you can't put them in timeout. They just have to do it. It's got to come from each individual guy and say, hey, look, know the snap count, focus, dial in, get lined up, be on sides, line upright, look at the formation, study the playbook. Like I said, I hate to sound so elementary, but that's what it is. They're making those mistakes. So, yeah, Anthony, I don't know what it is. I you know, everything was, you know, looking so positive. I don't want to say looking so positive. They weren't making these mistakes last year, to your point. Now, all of a sudden, they can't, you know, they're getting beat. They're losing some of the physical battles and making some of the physical mistakes. And then compiling on top of all that are all these mental errors, missed assignments, procedural penalties. It's frustrating, and I don't know where I don't know other than, you know, coaching or looking at individual players and just being having a lack of focus. I don't know what else to call it.
Does Kevin look desperate on the sidelines?
You know, I could say like desperate slash kind of frustrated because, you know, I hear he's very calculated in his responses, especially in the media. He says the right things. I don't want to say it seems scripted, but he's very calculated. He's a smart guy with what he's saying and delivering to the media. And look, they practice, they meet all day. It's like the message is, hey, look, let's stop shooting ourselves in the foot. Let's not do this. And it's still happening. So why that's happening, I don't know. That's one of life's greatest mysteries. And I've been a part of teams that it keeps happening. And you're just like, my God, why is this happening? Just line up. Line up. Do, you know, take care of your business. But, yeah, I see him on the sidelines. And I think frustration is starting to weigh heavily on his shoulders because, you know, I've seen this before with offensive head coaches, especially now where it's like, you know, we've talked about kind of this hybrid offense they're running. We don't know if it's Dorsey, it's him, it's, well, you know, we got to do Deshaun stuff. Now you got to feature Nick Chubb and get him back into the fray. Oh, and oh, by the way, we got to get David Njoku the ball. And oh, by the way, we got to give our offensive line some extra help. So, I mean, that's his job. That's what he signed up for, and that's what NFL head coaches do. But, yeah, he looks a little frustrated because, guys, during the week, they are repping this stuff. They are practicing it. And if it does not look good in practice, they cross it off his Big Denny's menu card going into the weekend. Trust me. If it doesn't look good at practice, it doesn't make it to the game. So the fact that it's getting to the game and they're running it in the game means that they're executing things at practice, but they're just not, you know, carrying that success over to the game. And that's why he's looking so frustrated and on the sidelines. And I don't know if, like, not defeated, but I just think the season's starting to wear on him because he's like, you know, where do we go from here?
John Greco with us on the hotline. Nick Chubb, it was 11 rushes, 22 yards. He did get into the end zone, which was awesome. But overall, is this just a matter of him working his way back into things, or is this going to be the expectation maybe that it's something different from this point forward?
you know, we're at the point in the season where, you know, they're going to be cautious with him. He's a machine. I mean, he's able to come back from that injury. At least to me, it doesn't look like he's lost a step. Now, you know, he's not getting 25, 30 carries a game, and I don't think we're going to see that, especially if they continue to lose. I mean, they're not going to trot him out and just have him, you know, rushing the ball 30 times. But I was pleasantly surprised, encouraged, I should say, by what I saw out of him. And it looked like they were blocking things up, and he provided a spark. He sure as hell did for the fan base. I mean, everybody was so excited. He released a statement and did the theatrics of that, and that's great. That's what everybody needs right now. But I just don't think he can carry this team on his back alone. I just think that they need some other help, and offensively they need to find, another weapon and two more weapons and do things a little bit better on offense to help him. Because I think it's unrealistic for us to sit here and think that he's going to save the season by himself. If they get better quarterback play, if the offensive line steps up a little bit better, and we find, Jerry Jeudy, David Njoku, some of the other guys, if things start to get rolling, then, yeah, I think that you'll see more of Nick Chubb. But I was encouraged. It was great to see him score. And it looks like his knee is better, but they're not going to push it. They're going to be really, really cautious about things.
Somebody asked me on Twitter, let me ask you this. Is it as easy to say as Bill Callahan isn't walking through that door? Because we hear that he had so much more to do than just the offensive line. Run game things. A lot of stuff with the concepts of the offense that maybe we didn't necessarily talk about very much while he was here.
Yeah, I think I don't think that's the only reason, but that's a big part of it. And you know, look, the three of us talked at the beginning of the season and off season, you know, what's that going to look like? And no one really knew, unless you're in those meeting rooms, wondering what he's doing. Is he building the protections? Is he working with the running backs, working with the tight ends? Sitting in the quarterback room, I've had years where I played where it is so involved and you're with everybody and you're like, man, this feels good. This feels like we're all on the same page because everybody's involved in pass protection. And then there's years it's like, man, this is weird. There's only four of us in this meeting room on Friday night or Friday afternoon watching this blitz cut up with one quarterback. So it just, you know, it's all about what guys are willing to do in the room extra. But I think it's obvious that the Bill Callahan had his hands on more of things than not. And they're trying to navigate without him right now. So I don't know if it's kind of a, you know, split responsibilities to where, you know, hey, offensive line, you just do the pass protections. Ken Dorsey, you're going to be the run game coordinator. We don't know what that looks like because all we have to go off of what Coach Stefanski is telling us in the media. So, yeah, I don't want to say, oh, that's it. That's the only reason why they're bad. But I think that has a lot to do with it right now, guys, because it looks so different without him.
John, finally, was it a dark day for Cleveland sports fans on Sunday that there were boos before the game, and then some said there were a mixture of cheers and boos for an injured quarterback?
Yeah, you know, Anthony, that's... It's tough. I would never wish injury upon a guy. And I know it wasn't the entire stadium. It was a small percentage of bad eggs that was doing it. And, you know, maybe they have regrets on doing it. And at some point you have to realize it's a game, it's a team. And it's like, you know, is it really worth that, like, cheering for a guy? And maybe after the game they were like, that was I shouldn't have done that. Maybe they have a little bit of regret from doing that, and then maybe not, and that's on them. That's fine. They pay to go to the game. They could boo, they could cheer. This, you know, this isn't a moral thing here where we're like, well, they're not going to be allowed to, you know, come back to the games. That's on them. They can choose whether they boo or cheer. You know, I don't want to sit here and say, like, when I heard it, I was throwing things at the TV, or I'm like, oh, the Browns fans are terrible. Because it wasn't the whole stadium, and it's a smaller percentage of the fans.
But you know what? Yeah. This is some here, John, because, again, I've never been a player, obviously, at least to that level, right?
Yeah.
Like, me as a fan, what I can't stand is, well, now all Browns fans are threat. No, they're not.
No.
But there's also the prevailing thought to some people, to again a minority, like they are obviously uncomfortable with what he's been accused of. They don't like him because of what he's been accused of. They think that it's right to boo him because of what he's been accused of. And I go, well, you can feel how you feel. But at the same time, I'm not going to throw dirt on my own name and my own face just because I might not like him. Like, I don't think that two wrongs necessarily make a right in this case, John. Like, that's the whole point of it. But for you, like, let me ask you this real quick, and then we got to go. But I got to get this in. Like, is it to the point to players where it's just like, hey, you know what? Cities are kind of cities, and there's not much of a difference anymore between fan bases. It is kind of an us versus them mentality.
I don't think so. I think when you're faced with adversity like this team is right now, when the team does something right, the fans are still going to cheer. When they don't, when they're not playing well and there's a bad product, fans are going to boo. Myles Garrett understands that. Joel Bitonio understands that. The veterans understand that, and they know, and they're still going to show up and show out. It, you know, to your point, the entire Browns fan base, they're not pit bad people. They're going to boo because they're frustrated, because they've been frustrated for a long time, and they deserve to do that. But, you know, booing injuries, I don't think there's any place for it, whether you like the guy or not. Seeing someone go down with an Achilles like that, I just didn't think it was very classy to do. But I think they're going to turn the page, and it's going to happen fast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
There's going to be some more boos throughout the year, and there's going to be some more cheers. Deshaun Watson is done for the year. We'll see what happens moving forward next year. And there's plenty of time for us to talk about that. But for right now, it's going to be Jameis. The fans are going to cheer. The fans are going to boo. And life's going to go on. And that's kind of my thoughts on it.
If I could turn my mic on. John, thank you very much for the time. All the best.
Guys, thank you.
John Greco spoke about the fans. See, we are in challenge mode here. You got that out of me. So pay attention, because we got a trophy and everything, folks. John Greco brought it up. You're saying that there are people in the mentions who are dredging this up, because we'll do this for one more day. We got Rodney coming in, who say I'm nuts that there were thousands upon thousands upon thousands that were cheering.
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten a few. There seems to be a disagreement on how many people did.
Well, I can't take a head count. I can only go from my experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, you know, people are accusing us of defending the fans that were doing it.
I'm not defending the fans that are doing it. I'm defending
that.
Browns fans as a whole.
I don't think we've
there
done that.
There were not 70,000 people
like,
in that stadium doing that.
But like I said, Bottlegate at most, 25, 30 people were throwing bottles, but some of them were throwing two or three or four. Well, at the end, it's 72,000. 72,000 people threw bottles that day at the fans and the referees and the players. That's just how it goes down.
Yeah.
So when you're hearing people talk about this, once the players all decided, according to Daryl, to talk about this after the game, then that just became a fact. That just became how it's going to be written in the history books.
And what it did is it put it, and I think a lot of fans are getting upset because it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Again, this is where I think that 99% of fans, in fact, I know because I was in the stadium, in the stands, 99% of fans were not whooping it up and hooting and hollering. I'm not saying that 99% of fans were sad to see him go. No. I'm saying they weren't hooting and hollering because they weren't going to get dirt on their name just because they didn't like him. And there's also the point of, wait a minute, whoa. You're going to turn it around and turn it on us? Like, Daryl, I'm not going to say what Daryl said. I don't believe that to be the case. I don't want to believe that's the case. I don't want to believe that they had some meeting and they closed the media off and the media had to, remember, Daryl said they closed the doors behind the media in the conference room, which is something, according to Daryl, they never do. And they all met and they said they're going to yell, they're going to talk about the fans. Because that is a massive distraction to put it back on the fans and have the fans arguing amongst themselves, which is a hell of a move if they really wanted to do it, instead of talking about, well, we can't have an offensive line that blocks. And our quarterback situation is bad. And our coaching is downright an abomination right now. And that maybe it was Bill Callahan, after all, that was the puppet master of all this. That our kicker can't hit field goals anymore. Yeah, that went by. That we still can't get lined up right in week 7. High school football teams in D7 get lined up right by the time week 1 comes around. There are kids who put on helmets for the first time and go start week 1, and they can get lined up right. You're professionals. You can't get lined up right? Jed Wills doing ole. Inside over linebacker. First rule of football. It's right there, sir. Right there. Turn around, looking around. Like that, what was the cat meme? That's what it looked like. Are we doing that to cover up for this? Because you can yell and scream at all the fans. The fans can change their behavior. They'll sit on their hands, I guess, next time anybody gets hurt. But again, there probably wouldn't be such feelings if that person gets hurt, for crying out loud. But do I have any trust that you're going to get lined up right on Sunday against Baltimore?
Well,
have any trust that you're going to be able to find the right people to block on Sunday?
I don't know. Maybe we're disagreeing here. I just don't think the story of that game was how badly they played, because it feels like the season's over. So the story is going to be Deshaun Watson,
but
him going down,
yes,
and the fans' reaction to it, and the fans'
course
reaction throughout the day.
It's the biggest thing. But when you make it the biggest thing instead of what they did wrong, it would have been, if that never happens and they go out and they just lose that game against the Bengals, it's the same old, but we're yelling about the same old, and we're even angrier because we have to continue to do so. So there's more heat on the people involved. And again, you agreed with me this entire time because of what they said on Sunday afternoon.
That this
would
be the story.
Where Greg Newsom let him have it, and where Miles let him have it, and where other players let him have it as well, that if they go out there and he gets beat over the top on Sunday, guess what people are calling in on Monday about Greg Newsom? Oh, you're going to tell me how to do my job? Are you going to tell me how to live my life?
Yeah, but did you realistically ever think that the players were going to not side with their teammates over the fans?
No.
They're always going to side with their team. And by the way,
wouldn't you?
I know there's no analogy I could even think of to relate it to anything we do in the, quote, real world. And that's not even me and you, because we're not really doing that. But somebody who's on a job site, you think they're going to side with someone else over their teammates or coworkers?
No.
I mean, these guys, they feel like the only people that understand what they do is each other.
And that's
And so
why,
when they see an injured player that is crying and letting out that kind of emotion, and yet even if it were only a fraction of the fans that, you know, were reacting in the way that they were reacting, you know, that's what stood out to them. The game is the game, but that stuff transcends the game to them.
And that, and I understand, and that's why I've said what I've said over the last couple of days. I think that we are a bunch of nameless gray faces to them, but I would understand because I believe that they play a what about me game or what if it were me game as they see anybody. They could not like the guy personally. They're still whole football players. So if the worst thing that you could think of happens where you're being carted out of a stadium, you know, you guys made the joke about me doing a tomahawk chop the day I got carted out of a stadium for crying out loud, which is not true. Did give the thumbs up. However, like, no one ever wants to take that ride. A lot of guys have taken that ride. And it's a terrible thing to do because if you're getting carted out, very rarely does a guy get carted out and he's back on the field that year. It's over. And for some guys, it's over forever. And for that case, they get worried about that and they think, okay, what if they sat there and cheered me? You guys don't care about me at all. I'm over here. This is an emotional moment. And they look up and they probably saw some person who was overserved in the stands whooping it up over Deshaun Watson getting hurt. Or they probably saw a gaggle of people who were overserved in the stands whooping it up. But when it was thousands upon thousands. No, and I'll take it to my dying day. I was there.
Well, we'll ask Rodney McLeod that coming up in just about 24 minutes.
I love how you're getting this stoked up. Both of you guys, I know what you're doing to me. Why do I always have to be the heavy? You're the slippery wizard. Why can't you step in there and have some stones?
Why you have to be the heavy is pretty obvious.
Okay, fair enough.
Come on.
No, it's true. I am the biggest person in here. Why do I always got to be the one to do it? Why can't you do it?
Maybe
he ain't going to get up and hit you.
No, maybe it's just that, you know, you guys don't see eye to eye on things. You know, me and Rodney, parents. We're living on the West Side. We have more things in common than you could ever imagine.
So you must believe that all Browns fans should be ashamed of themselves then, huh? I mean, two can play this game.
You're assuming Rodney's going to pin that all on the fans?
I'm not sure. All I know is that I'm pro-Browns fan. I'm the one who was here before him, and I'll be the one who is here after him. And so will all the Browns fans. We can play this game if we want to. I've learned a thing or two from the wizard here over the last near decade. Rodney McLeod at 9 o'clock. You want to ask him those questions instead of
the
big matzo ball in the soup right there? It'd be.
Wonder too, you know what?
You want him to do Seven in Hell? You think that would work?
I don't know. When it comes to, you know, having things air out a little bit, you know, the 24-hour rule and all that, we're a few days later. Like, do you think Jameis, Miles, would they say the exact same things they said a day later? Maybe they would. I don't know. That's why it's good that we're having Rodney come in today, because we've all seen how this has played out over the course of a few days. The immediate emotions kind of die down and allows us to be a little more reflective on things.
Yeah, but what, you're just going to sit here and be a cheerleader for him as I have to ask a tough question or say a tough statement?
I don't think it's a cheerleader. I think it depends. Like, your big take was that you didn't think a lot of people were doing it. Other people were like, Kenny, there were a lot of fans doing it in the stands.
And I think that they overreacted too.
The fans that were doing it or fans that were reacting
the people
to the
that
fans
feel
doing
that
it?
They felt that there were so many fans doing it. I do not believe that.
Well, you
were
surprised.
I told you
right when it happened, I immediately got videos, texts, and they said you could not believe how many people were cheering this. And you had a totally different take. You're like, not that many people were doing it. So is it just where you were sitting?
Maybe. I wasn't in 537.
Well, does that
maybe the 537 felt a little bit different than what the people in my
section
did?
That's what I mean. Could you be wrong? Could you be off that it just wasn't your area?
I can only go by what I saw. I was in the stadium. That's what I went by. All right? I don't know how great I would have done during the Kennedy assassination. I can only go by what I saw.
Like, if you were in the press box, the windows are closed, right?
Well, that window was open.
What the?
Oh, you're talking about something else. I thought you were talking about the assassination.
I'm saying if you were in the press box, then you wouldn't be hearing it. It's not like everything's mic'd up in the press box. It's quiet. It's always quiet. Even when it's loud in the stadium, it can be pretty quiet.
Yeah, it's pretty.
So you wouldn't be, like, the people that were in the press box would not be the ones to give a good evaluation of what that felt like or what it sounded like.
Yeah. I also, I think that.
Because everybody that I have,
I think that there was
everybody I heard from said in their group there were people absolutely cheering and they had to tell them to stop.
I think that there were several people who did not want to see people cheer it because they knew it was a serious injury, and they didn't want to look bad because they know that we all make each other look bad when it comes to fan bases, and I think that they made it out to be a little bit bigger than what it was. I know that a lot of people disagree with me. But there's a lot of people who agree with me. I saw what Tom Withers had written. I totally agree with what Tom Withers had written. When he first went down, I think there were some people who might have been upset that they thought he just turned the ball over. And that was it. I think that some of the self-fulfilling prophecy of what you had talked about before were, well, this kind of, I'm not blaming you for this, Tone. I'm not blaming you. But when you had said, well, these things kind of take care of themselves. And I kept going, what does that mean? You go, these things kind of take care of themselves. We might see something where, my knee, my hamstring, my groin, something like that all of a sudden comes around, and these things kind of take care of themselves. I think some people might have been thinking that. When I think, and I told you, there was an emotion that played out when it first happened. Then when they showed it on the Jumbotrons, I think that that emotion changed. When he was carted off, I believe there was a warm reception by many, many people
we've heard there was.
The stadium,
yeah.
The right way that that usually happens.
Yeah, we've heard there was, especially when they showed him crying. I mean, I don't care who you are. When you see somebody showing that kind of real emotion, that one did get to me. And despite what you might feel about how this situation is going, how you felt about him before, throughout all of this, like when you see somebody crying that's put in a lot of hard work to get back on a football field, you know, that does impact most. Doesn't impact everybody, because I saw people that said that did not matter to them one iota.
Buckeyes are back from the bye week. They take on Nebraska this coming weekend, who just lost 56-7, and they get themselves ready for the stretch run of the college football season. Nick Wilson, Spencer German, break down everything around Ryan Day and the Buckeyes on their Sons of the Shoe podcast. Subscribe now at the Odyssey app, which is free. 92.3thefan.com, wherever you get your podcast, to make sure you have fresh episodes each week of the college football season. Tim and Strong's. Good morning. Tim. Larry in Maple Heights. Good morning. Uh-oh. Chuck in Cleveland. Hello.
Good morning, guys.
Chuck,
there
Bo
he
Buck.
Is. Yes.
Away you go.
Yes.
Hey, a couple things real quick. You know, in the heat of the battle, you know, when Joe Turkey Jones stuffed Terry Bradshaw, I wanted his neck to be broken, but I didn't really mean it. You know, you just have the emotions of sports. I call it sports hate. But I think it's overblown, and everyone's a little self-righteous on the whole thing. And Stefanski, but I really want to talk about the coach and the GM. That's the elephant in the room to me, because they're not going to the trillion-dollar complex. So that needs to be addressed. Otherwise, Ooh. It's going to look like Dwight Clark and frickin' whatever else that other thing was at the last minute of the 99.
You got 90 more seconds, Chuck. Say it with your chest.
Carmen,
what do you want to say, boss? What do you want to say? Say it.
Well, what I want to say is Stefanski, before Deshaun Watson, Stefanski, you know, he crept the bed many times. We've seen the games that Watson's played. We saw those games with Baker. We saw, and those guys are too connected. Barry and Stefanski are too connected. Usually you have a coach that's a little bit miffed with the GM. He got the wrong guy, but I coach the team. You don't. These guys are like, if one thing happens, it's like it happens to both of them. You know, so mm-hmm. we need to address how we're going to move forward, because they're not going to Brook Park. Those guys aren't going to Brook Park.
Some of these decisions that have been made here, Chuck, this is very premature. I think he's going to do everything he can to try to win football games. I really do believe that, Chuck, and thank you very much for the call. Talking about Kevin Stefanski, I think we might – seeing his reactions on the sidelines, I don't think that – if you were to ask him in a closed room, and he's a guy who gives you barely anything at all, but if you were really going to get the truth out of him, I don't think that he had much faith in him coming back anyway, as far as a good quarterback. The reactions that we're seeing on the sidelines, the way that he's acting – it seems to be just not him. Not him. It's not classic Kevin Stefanski behavior. Now, 1-6 will do that to just about any man. But he feels like almost he's been saddled with the quarterback. And there might reach a point where it's like, you know what? You've said it a million times. Maybe he would want a clean break at the end of this year. He wouldn't step down. You're not going to step away
no.
from the money, that whatever amount of money he's taken for this extension. But maybe it would do him a favor, because you just said, well, they'd probably hire him right off the bat. I mean, everybody and their brother outside of Cleveland lines up and says how good of a coach he is, how good of a general manager Andrew Berry is. Except for Mina Kimes. She seemed to have started to question some of the decisions that have been made here outside of Cleveland. Clevelanders are questioning the decision, but outside, it still seems to be Teflon for a lot of folks out there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.